I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, famous quotes, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous hosts, and other listeners, join our Facebook group, the Raven Puff Common Room.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we're covering Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, Chapter 13, Nicholas Flamel, and Chapter 14, Norbert the Norwegian Ridgeback. In these chapters, Harry finally discovers what lies hidden beyond Fluffy. And Hagrid is an irresponsible, exotic animal owner who reminds me of all those horror stories in the news when someone dies from their own venomous snakes or is mauled by their own wolves or lions.
Oh my gosh, poor Hagrid. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, because especially where I live in the Midwest, apparently laws are very, very lax when it comes to that sort of wild animal ownership.
Yeah, I think every now and then we hear a story of like a snake crawled through the toilet or just something just totally wild, or there's a panther on the loose. I mean, not, you know, one that should not be there. Panther. So I like that association you made with Hagrid. I feel bad for him because I feel like I'm an animal lover and my heart is in the right place. I think that's kind of what we've said about Hagrid numerous times. His heart's in the right place, but maybe think it through a little bit.
The big one that comes to mind is when this guy in Ohio had all these lions, all these tigers, all these wildcats, and he went crazy and decided to commit suicide. But before he commits suicide, he released all of his wildcats and even left himself to be devoured by his own cats.
I remember that. What a wild way to let animals loose just in the area. Did they find them all?
Yeah, and it was just, again, a lot of controversy. And I don't blame the police, again, like, you know, just the situation with stuff. They didn't have the time or the means to, like, tranquilize all of them. So, you know, just because they were coming into, like, neighborhoods and stuff, so they just had to shoot them all.
Yeah, oh, man.
And again, a lot of them were, like, endangered Bengali tigers and, like, things like that. And everyone was just so mad.
Yeah, it's too bad that, the issue is the person that kept them anyway. Like, just don't do that. I don't. Then I think about the Tiger King and I don't really want to go there, but.
Oh, I have not watched the Tiger King yet.
I would say don't waste your time, but that's my personal.
Yeah. But apart from Hagrid comparing him to these wackos, what did you think of these two chapters?
Well, I felt like a total idiot because when Nicholas Flamel was revealed, I was like, I can't believe that I missed that. But then I was like, I didn't feel too bad. The Quidditch was light in this chapter, which was fine. And then the Norbert, their Norwegian Ridgeback, hard for me to say. I enjoyed it. All I could think the whole time was, I bet Amy loves this because I know how much you like dragons. So that was really my main takeaway. Nothing. I took some notes. Nothing super gothic-y, but I mean, I'm sure we'll get there.
Of course. But yeah, so the chapter begins where Dumbledore has convinced Harry not to go looking for the Mirror of Erised. And I think it's very wise on Ron's part where he says, "You see, Dumbledore was right. That mirror could drive you mad," said Ron. And I think it shows a level of maturity that Ron could recognize the addictive nature of the mirror in a way Harry couldn't.
Yes. And I think that, you know, and he talks about having nightmares because of what the mirror showed him, and just kind of having seen that flash of green and what does he say? A high voice cackled with laughter. So it does show some maturity level on Ron's part and Harry's, because, you know, some people wouldn't be able to stop. He'd be like, sure, this genius person is telling me to stop, but I just can't resist. So
I think Ron is showing that maturity. I think it's part of two things. Number one, that we, like we discussed last episode, Ron's desire is much more superficial, I guess we could say. And so he's not as deeply rooted or invested in it in the same way that Harry's invested in what he saw.
Right. Yeah.
So I think that's one part. And I think the second part is that because he's from a magical family, and specifically, as we'll learn later, his father works with like enchanted objects and, you know, understanding the implications of things that maybe are enchanted and maybe look benign on the surface may actually have really darker properties.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I don't know much about the Weasleys quite yet. I just know that he has big fans.
Yeah, we'll get to like what his father does and stuff in book two. And so they continue on with their little lives. And I love Hermione, like she didn't know what made her more furious. The fact that he was gallivanting around in the middle of the night, or more disappointed that despite his gallivanting, had found nothing on Nicholas Flamel.
I know it's not fair. I mean, I don't know how hard they tried. Really, they seem to be having a good time. But you know that like if Hermione was still around, that would have been the main focus of their Christmas little break.
Yeah. And then, of course, Harry continues with Quidditch practice, and Wood drops the bomb that Snape is refereeing the game.
Yeah, that was that. So from the little I know of Snape and the portrayal in popular culture, it doesn't seem like Quidditch referee is in his repertoire, but
no, yes, like he does, apart from general liking his house to win, like he himself, he does not give a crap about Quidditch. Like
I feel like Snape and I feel like the same about football. Like it's nice when the city's team wins, but like otherwise, whatever.
So Harry tells Ron and Hermione this, and they're like, don't play, Hermione said it once, say you're ill, pretend to break your leg, really break your leg.
That reminded me of our conversation we had with Amanda and Kevin, and just when he said really break your leg, it's like, yeah, because the consequences are like not as severe as they would be for you and me. I mean, sure, it's painful, but easily remedied, which is just an interesting thing to think
about. Again, about the implications of how much bodily harm can they truly withstand?
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah. I know. I feel like I talked a little bit of a bigger game on that episode that I really truly I'm not out looking to get punched in the face or whatever.
Yeah, and again we kind of see Harry's battle, and again I think his immature and misplaced judgment of putting so much emphasis on Quidditch, even though again he's operating under the premise that he thinks Snape's out to get him, and now Snape is going to be on the field or in the air with him.
Yeah, he does. It does make, there is part of this Quidditch match, it does have some good insight into Harry, and I think it brings about some points a little further in the chapter that you've pointed out, points that you've pointed out in this match in particular. So I'm interested.
Yep. And then so they're talking about this, and Neville comes hopping into Gryffindor Tower.
Yeah. And the first thing, because I guess they're young boys, is to laugh at him. And then Hermione's like, wait a second, how did this happen? Like, good old Hermione being logical and trying to figure out the problem instead of just laughing at his misery.
Mm-hmm. And of course, were you surprised that it was Malfoy?
Not at all. Not at all.
And I just kind of wonder, again, we also get Malfoy taunting Neville, like, during the Quidditch match in the stands. And it's just made me think, like, why does Malfoy pick on Neville? Is it just because it's easy target? I have another theory. I think part of it is just Neville is easy, but also I think Neville is actually a pureblood, like Ron, and from a prominent family, but does not exemplify that sort of wizarding pride the way that Malfoys and other families do. So I think it's a part of that, like you're not being what you should be.
That's a really interesting point. Because I kind of wondered that too. Like, why did he pick on him so much? I think, too, we've talked about how Malfoy is a little jealous of Ron and Hermione, and I guess Neville too, because they're friends with Harry.
Yeah.
I didn't know if that might be a factor as well. But I, like I said, this is my kind of like Harry Potter knowledge that's vague. I know Neville is very important and does something very brave later on in the series. I don't know what that is. I have like some speculation. But he, Harry says something to Neville to kind of give him a little ego boost. But sometimes I feel like I can relate to Neville a little too closely. So I have a soft spot in my heart for him.
Yeah, I need that that t-shirt of like, we all want to be Harry, but we're all really Neville.
That is very true for me.
Yeah. So Harry tries to cheer him up by giving him a chocolate frog card. And then that is when he realizes where he heard the name Nicholas Flamel.
And that made me feel like the biggest ding dong in the entire. I was like, of course. I'm guessing I'm not the only one who overlooked that, because I'm just, like I said, I was so enamored with Dumbledore. But yes, that's where we learn that he was an alchemy partner with Dumbledore.
Yeah, and so that's why I specifically read the whole card aloud, like, when we were at that chapter.
And I totally was like, oh, it's pretty cool. So that's,
well, I was distracting you in 1945 in World War II.
Ah, well, I'm done distracted. I mean, that was good job.
So yeah, so now it makes sense why they couldn't find Flamel in any of the books, because all they were doing was like famous wizards of the 20th century, when in reality, Nicholas Flamel is like over 600 years old.
Yeah, this guy's old as hell. That's pretty wild. And then his wife is like six. I think, is he 50 years older than his wife? I don't remember. But she's like just as, she is 658.
Yeah, so she's actually 3 years older than him.
All right, good for her.
Yeah, no. And did you know Nicholas Flamel was a real person?
Okay, so because of the Sorcerer's Stone, which is, I read a book. I think I read The Alchemist.
Yeah.
I feel like there was, maybe that's where I had heard that name before, because, so I kind of sort of felt like that was familiar, but tell me more, because I'm not sure.
Well, just again, he was an alchemist in the 1400s, and he was famed for, again, the whole, a big chunk of alchemy, you know, in real life, was trying to create this Sorcerer's Stone, that the whole idea of transformation, being able to change one metal into gold, like being able to change the core principles of, you know, matter and things like that. You know, alchemy is basically the precursor to what we consider like modern chemistry.
Right.
And so, yeah, so he's a real guy, or he was a real guy. And so a lot of times whenever the mythical philosopher's stone comes into play in modern literature, he will often be like rejuvenated as being someone who actually did create the philosopher's stone and is living currently still.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting. So he pops up in literature more than Harry Potter.
Yeah. More than Harry Potter. Again, if the philosopher's stone comes into play, whether he's an actual character or, again, merely mentioned. Yeah, so he can pop up in a lot because he is the only one who allegedly ever created one, which I can kind of make sense because he was on the wealthier side and he, you know, I don't remember exactly how old he was when he died, but he did, you know, live quite long, especially for people of that time. So it kind of makes sense that people put those together and think that he actually did it.
Interesting. Sounds like an interesting guy, too.
Mm-hmm. That's what they realize Fluffy is guarding, which makes sense because this package that Hagrid took out of Gringotts was so small. And again, it's a stone.
Right. Okay. Yeah, you know, for a while, I thought, like, maybe it was the dragon egg. I don't know why. I thought that was more valuable than it was. And then I'm, like, reading this, and I'm like, the title is called Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. Like, what is it? I there's this, you know, like, expression when people tell you who they are, like, the first time, believe them. I'm like, the freaking title is telling me what is hiding under Fluffy's feet. So that was a moment of me needing to observe a little closer.
Yeah, no. And again, just the whole, you know, now growing up again, as you can see, I'm referring to it as the Philosopher's Stone because I really get frustrated, again, that, you know, when certain publishers make decisions, not necessarily because it's the right decision, but just that they, again, they're thinking mostly about their bottom line and think what will sell more.
Mm,
and yeah. So the idea that in the American version that
Philosopher's Stone was changed to Sorcerer's Stone because, God forbid, kids thought there might be an inkling of philosophy in education and therefore it'll be boring and no one will want to read it.
Yeah, that is funny. I didn't even think about that. I'm looking at, so I have like a, you sent me a copy, the Hufflepuff copy, gorgeous. And then I also have like a paperback set here. So notice that this is, on this one, it says the Sorcerer's Stone. The one you sent me is too pretty to mark up. So.
Yeah. I never mark up my books. Like, I will type out my notes.
You are a better book reader than me, because I am highlighting the hell out of this book. So good history on that.
So, and especially now because my husband's a philosophy scholar, I'm even extra honing in on it should have been kept as Philosopher's Stone.
Yeah, exactly. I would like to talk to you sometime about The Alchemist for various reasons, but we don't have to. This is the Harry Potter podcast, so I won't go down that road. But encountering this before, and Nicholas Flamel, it's interesting to know that this was worked into a children's book, which I think is great.
Mm-hmm. And then amidst all of this, Harry decides, you know, I'm going to play in Quidditch despite Snape refereeing.
Yeah, what was his reasoning for that? Was just kind of like, it would be better for him to be out there so then he could like keep an eye on him or something? Was that his reason?
Who's like Snape?
Harry's. Like that Snape was going to be out there, so that's good because he can also kind of, you know, keep an eye out for Snape and any of his trickery.
I guess it's just the implication of what he can think Snape can get away with, like in public, and how stealthy could Snape do something and not be incriminated.
Right.
Yeah, so I don't know. So yeah, but they end up, you know, Quidditch match comes. And we actually don't get much from directly Harry's perspective, which again, going back to, I think, you know, later on when Harry was writing these books, he had to talk to Ron and Hermione and like, what exactly was happening in the stands while I was playing?
Yeah, it's definitely, there's more concentration in this Quidditch match of the kind of kerfuffle going on in the stands with Malfoy. And there's just a lot going on.
I haven't heard the word kerfuffle in so long.
I don't know why, where it came from, so I'm glad to use it.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so we got Hagrid's not here in this one, so yeah. And I thought the stands were, like, divided by house, so I don't know why Malfoy is up in Ron and Hermione and all the Gryffindor's business.
I wondered that, too, because I kind of thought that as well, but I guess he just, like, wanted to... Obviously, he wanted to start some...
Yeah, and then, again, Malfoy, his insults, again, just reverting to, I'm rich and you're not.
Yeah, do better. And then he makes fun of poor Neville, and that...
Yeah, and Neville's like, I'm worth 12 of you. And he's like, Longbottom, if brains were gold, you'd be poorer than Weasley, and that's saying something.
I hated that so much. I mean, not that we're really looking to make Malfoy the hero here, but I thought that was so sad, because I think, again, you know... feeling relating to Neville, somebody tells you something encouraging and you're like, you relay that to a bully, and then they just kind of spit it back to you in a way that you didn't plan for. At least that's, I've had that happen when I was a kid, and it just made my heart sink a little bit.
Yeah, actually, it makes me think of, luckily I was able to get the last word in on, you know, some bullies. So I was in fourth grade in the cafeteria, you know, waiting in line to get food. And there were these popular, like, sixth grade girls who were, you know, right behind me in the line. And she's like, oh, what are all these little kids doing here? And I turned around and said, we're 2 years apart. Like, calm down, or like something to that effect. I'm not little. And then I heard them mocking me, like, behind my back and saying, like, in a high falsetto voice, oh, I'm not little, blah, blah, blah. And then finally I turned around again and stuck my, like, fist, like, inches from her nose. And I'm like, do you want this fist for lunch?
You were like, man, you had some courage that I did not
and have. She just gaped at me. Like, she was shocked that I had the audacity to say that. And all of the, like, fourth grade guys in my class were like, yeah, Amy.
Yeah, I'm proud of little Amy.
Yeah, so too, luckily she wasn't as good at verbal foreplay as Malfoy and could not think of anything to say.
Yeah, I feel like I encountered some people. Well, and I'm in I'm very shy, so it was really awkward for me. I just kind of felt like I wilted and ran off when I don't even remember what it was said. But all that to say, when I was reading about Neville in this experience, I felt his pain.
Yeah, I didn't take any crap when I was a kid. I've gotten worse as I've gotten older. Like, not worse as in more, like, abrasive, worse as in I don't stick up for myself as much because I know that's a certain, like, social faux pas.
It's a learning process. That's what I'll say for myself. So
yeah, and then so Harry goes into a dive because they think he's seen the snitch, and Malfoy is like, "You're in luck, Weasley. Potter's oddly spotted some money on the ground." And then Ron just snaps and just goes after Malfoy, and then Neville goes after Crabbe and Goyle.
This whole thing confused me. I was like, there are children fighting, like, in the stands, and nothing seems to be happening. I guess everybody's glued to what's going on in the sky. But that kind of puzzled me.
Yeah, like, there's a lot of things that happen before or around Quidditch, and, you know, you're not the first to think about where the hell are the teachers.
Okay, good.
Well, you know, McGonagall's just completely out.
Yeah, she is invested.
Yeah, and so I don't know how bad the other teachers have the Quidditch bug, but yeah.
It must be pretty bad, because all I could think about was, like, if people started fighting in school, like, usually it was like, somebody get a teacher, but maybe it's because it's Malfoy, everybody thinks it's an idiot.
Or again, they can withstand bodily harm.
There we go, that's true, so they're like, just let them get it out of their system, so...
Yeah, and then so Harry can catch the snitch very quickly, and then we didn't mention, but before this, Harry realized that Dumbledore was in the stands, and from Dumbledore being there, Harry felt that reassured that there's no way Snape can try to do anything.
Right, that gives him the little bit of, like, comfort that he needs.
You haven't been brooding about that mirror, but keeping busy, excellent. And then Snape spat bitterly on the ground.
I don't get Snape. In these chapters, I'm sure maybe eventually I'll figure it out. But I'm just like, dude, what the hell's your deal? Other than just being pissed off. I don't know. He's annoying me right now.
Yeah. He annoys a lot of people. He annoys, like, 80% of the fandom.
There are some people that love him. And I feel like eventually I'll figure out why. But right now I'm kind of like, dude, just chill. That's how I feel.
Mm-hmm. And so Harry goes back to the locker room and is, like, getting ready to go back to the castle, but he sees a hooded figure walking past the grounds towards the forest. And who is it?
Oh, Mr. Severus Snape.
Sneaking Severus Snape.
Yeah, sneaking Severus. Slithering on out of there.
Slithering on out towards the forest. And who is he meeting?
Oh, gosh. And let me think about this teacher's name. I can see him in my mind's eye with the turban. Quirrell.
Yeah, like squirrel, only Q.
Okay, because he is kind of squirrely, so that makes sense. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this exchange was confusing to me as well.
So what did you think about it?
I thought that these were two people that nothing happened. And I was like, what are you guys upset about? Snape is like, so, okay, obviously Quirrell wants... the stone, maybe. I'll be honest, I didn't know what was going on, and I was like, that was just very, and so tell me what did I miss, because I know, feel like I missed something.
Yeah, I'm not telling you anything yet.
okay, this was, but, very confusing conversation to me.
Yeah, so it's just the idea that clearly we can establish from this interaction they both know about the Sorcerer's Stone. And Snape is interrogating him, basically. Have you found out how to get past that beast of Hagrid's yet? You don't want me as your enemy, Quirrell.
What the hell? I guess, okay, Quirrell is the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher, right?
Right.
Okay. Well, then it makes a little more sense. For some reason, I'm, like, stuck that Snape is the Dark Arts teacher. He just wants to be the Dark Arts teacher.
Yeah, he wants to be, but Dumbledore has always denied him that position, and he's always stayed the potions master.
Okay. All right. Well, now this conversation, now that I've stopped and thought about it a little bit, makes a little more sense. It's still weird, and it's still... Harry witnesses all of this.
Yeah.
He's like, what the hell? I got some hot goss to share with him.
Yeah, and then, well, Snape, last thing he says, very well. We'll have another little chat soon when you've had time to think over and decide where your loyalties lie.
Ugh, that's very gross. Mm-hmm. This guy has enough problems. Like, that's what, he's already stressed out enough. He doesn't need Snape on his ass. So.
This is true. And then so Harry tells Ron and Hermione, and so we were right, it is the Sorcerer's Stone, and Snape's trying to force Quirrell to help him get it. He asked if he knew how to get past Fluffy, and he said something about Quirrell's hocus pocus. I reckon there are other things guarding the stone apart from Fluffy. Loads of enchantments, probably, and Quirrell would have done something anti-dark arts spell that Snape needs to break through. So you mean the stone's only safe as long as Quirrell stands up to Snape? Said Hermione in alarm. It'll be gone by next Tuesday.
Damn. Called out. Like, he's just calling kind of Quirrell a chicken. And
yep.
And
yeah. Thus concludes chapter 13.
There we go. Now we get to talk about the dragon. That's exciting.
Yes. Chapter 14, Norbert the Norwegian Ridgeback. So they keep an eye on Quirrell and see how he's doing. And he seems to be holding up quite a while because Snape certainly is acting his normal grouchy self, so they infer from that he's had no progress, and they try to, you know, help Quirrell out. They smile encouragingly at him. Ron tells off anyone who is laughing at Quirrell's stutter. And despite that they're trying to, quote-unquote, protect a stone that can make someone immortal and turn things to gold, Hermione still is more concerned about her studies.
Of course. You got to remember the important things and imminent doom or passing this test. I get it. No, I think it's good, though, that she was kind of encouraging Ron and Harry to step up their game and study.
Yeah, she had started drawing up study schedules and color coding all her notes. Like, again, at this point in my life, you know, I cannot survive without my 8x5x11 like planner with all my stickers and all my appointments.
I mean, same. I can't either. My husband makes fun of me because he's like, you could do this on your phone. I'm like, no, I can't. I change platforms all the time. I can't do it. But I'm the same. I will say, though, I could have used a Hermione in my in some of my schooling. I could have for a while used somebody to be like, get it together, Jess.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unfortunately, the teachers seemed to be thinking along the same lines as Hermione. They piled so much homework on them that the Easter holidays weren't nearly as much fun as the Christmas ones. So again, just made me think, you know, for everyone, all the Christian fanatics who criticize Harry Potter as satanic, they have Christmas and Easter holidays, people.
Yeah, that's very strange. I'm glad you pointed this out because it did take me aback to see the word Easter in this book. That is a very Christian, like that, the connotations are very Christian in my mind. Now, I know there are other things around that, but it is interesting. The more you read it, it's typical of people to criticize things they haven't read. It's just like, oh, it's all about witches and wizards. This must be bad. It's like, maybe read the book first. I don't know.
And then, so they're in the library studying, and who is up in the library? Like a big elephant in the room. Hagrid.
Okay, I was hoping you were going to say Hagrid. Oh, I missed somebody. No, Mr. Hagrid.
And he's being all shady.
Yeah, he's got a secret. He has a very oval-shaped secret.
Indeed, and so, like, they try to talk to him about the Philosopher's Stone, and, like, to get them to shut up, Hagrid says, okay, you can come to my hut, you know, later today. And then Ron, you know, takes initiative and goes and sees exactly what section of the library he was in. And he realized it's all about dragons.
Good on Ron. I was proud of Ron in this moment for being like, I'm going to go check this out. Now, I know he's trying to get away from Hermione and the studying a little bit, but he's also, this was pretty smart, so...
Yeah, like, again, it was kind of sad that, again, Ron does not always have the best moments throughout the series. But here, again, showing his, again, realization about the potential dangers of the Mirror of Erised, taking the initiative to see exactly what is Hagrid up to. And then it's like, dragons, he whispers. Hagrid is looking up stuff about dragons. Look at these. Dragon species of Great Britain and Ireland. From Egg to Inferno, a Dragon Keeper's Guide.
This all was very interesting because this kind of building up to Norbert The way they talk about dragons to Harry was kind of like, yeah, you dumbass, this treaty happened. And I was like, huh, that's really interesting. I had to reread. There was a sentence in here that, oh gosh, maybe I'm going too far. No, dragon breeding was outlawed by the Warlocks Convention of 1709. Everyone knows that. And I had to read that again because it was Ron and I thought it was Hermione.
Exactly. I thought of that too. And so again, just showing that Ron isn't dumb.
No.
He just doesn't really apply himself. And I think Ron is able to recall this certain information because again, his brother Charlie works with dragons so much. And I'm sure that's pretty badass to, you know, your 11-year-old brother. And so you probably know a little bit maybe more about it.
I mean, that's pretty badass to this 30-something-year-old woman, too. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, but there aren't wild dragons in Britain. Of course there are, said Ron. Commonwealth Greens and Hebridean Blacks. The Ministry of Magic has a job hushing them up, I can tell you. Our kind have to keep putting spells on muggles who've spotted them to make them forget.
That's really funny. It made me think of True Blood a little bit when they glamour people to forget that they saw a vampire. Blood. I don't remember. Too many vampires.
Yeah, like in this world, it's not glamoring. It's called, they're just called memory charms. And I'm just thinking, you know, do they let wild ones run fly around all over? Or are there specific sanctuaries? Like, yeah, I'm just curious how exactly that works. Is it a combo of the two? I don't know.
Well, I'm thinking, okay, I'm glad you brought this up because I was thinking in like Game of Thrones context, like, in Daenerys dragons, that's like seeing a plane in the sky, a bigger plane, you know. I'm guessing they don't fly as high as an airplane. So when we have all these muggles seeing these dragons, like, I don't know, I probably overthought this whole scenario. Like, how the hell does that happen? And how frequently are they having, and how many dragons are really out there? I wanted to know more.
You know, this makes me think of, I think in my headcanon, I have it in my mind that dragons can in some way disguise themselves, like kind of make themselves invisible or at least camouflage themselves like on their own. And I think that's in part of what helps it. But there's nothing in the text to suggest that. But I'm thinking that is the only way I think that even with the Ministry of Magic trying to contain everything, I think that would be the only way in which, you know, dragons could coexist and not people not knowing about them.
And maybe I'm reaching too far, but like it would be interesting if the invisibility cloak and dragons had some sort of relation, because I like that. Like maybe there's a level of invisibility that they have.
What if the invisibility cloak is made out of some property of dragons?
That's exactly where I was going, Amy. I didn't want to say it because I was like, oh, God. But yes, exactly. Maybe there was like a little dragon's blood dyed in dragon's blood or something.
Or powdered dragon fang, I don't know.
Beautiful. I think we're onto something.
Indeed. So they realize it's about dragons, go down to Hagrid's hut, and of course, he's got an egg.
Pretty, and all I could see was, again, I'm thinking of Game of Thrones, and I think it's just because you were mentioning Winterfell and some Game of Thrones stuff. I could just see the Daenerys having the eggs, and that's in my mind what they look like. Now, I don't think it looks like that in the Harry Potter world, but that's what I saw, was that throwback to.
Yeah, but before we get into the dragon egg, you know, they talk about, you know, what else is guarding the Philosopher's Stone. And at first, Hagrid seemed adamant of not telling them. But then Hermione pulls in her sort of womanly, flattering charms. You may not want to tell us, but you do know, Hagrid. You know everything that goes on here.
What do you think of this?
I think... It's played off as humorous, and yeah, it is humorous at first glance, but at the same time, I also feel bad for Hagrid, because in the sense of, you know, again, he's a gamekeeper, and again, there are shitty kids like Malfoy. Like, just thinking, how often does Hagrid get recognized for all the things that he does for Hogwarts? Not very often, I don't think.
I agree. I just thought it was a little uncomfortable. Because Hagrid's chest swelled at these last words. Harry and Ron beamed at Hermione. I was like, are we getting into the, like, she's using her feminine wiles to, like, and I'm like, these kids are too young for that. Maybe if she was just being sweet, like, that's fine. But maybe I just, am a horrible individual, but I kind of thought there was a little implication of like, you know, her just using her feminine charms. And I thought that was a little...
You know, for me, feminine wiles is in two categories. One, there's the kind of main one of like flirting and like sexual or romantic. Mm-hmm. But to me, for this, obviously, because they're 11 years old, like Hermione's right. more playing up like daddy's little girl.
Okay. That's a better context than I first imagined it. And so I accept that.
You have
that.
A dirty mind, Jess.
I do. I know. I do. well, that's, I mean, so she was just kind of being, I mean, you're exactly right though. He doesn't get a lot of love for what he does. He does some pretty intense work for Hogwarts.
Yeah. And he does it without magic.
Yeah. That's
or at least limited magic.
Yeah.
So Hagrid goes on to reveal that a variety of professors helped Dumbledore protect the stone. McGonagall, Sprout, Quirrell, Flitwick, and Snape. And notice that except for Quirrell, all the professors that helped protect the stone, they're all the heads of the Hogwarts houses.
Okay. So this is kind of also showing the level of importance of this.
Yeah, like kind of definitely showing this, the tiers. There is, of course, the headmaster, Dumbledore, deputy headmistress, you know, McGonagall, but then the heads of houses, which is McGonagall, Snape, Flitwick is head of Ravenclaw, and Sprout is head of Hufflepuff. And then under them are like the other teachers.
Gotcha. And then Snape makes them go, what? Like kind of makes them pause there.
Yeah, so it's the idea that they are worried that, you know, if Snape helped, then maybe he could, you know, figure out what the other teachers did to help protect. And then it seems the only thing he doesn't know yet is Fluffy and Quirrell's little bit of magic.
Yes. Yeah. Which I'm curious about that as well.
Because
I don't know.
And then finally we move on to why is it so blasted hot in Hagrid's hut? And it's because he has to keep it at a specific temperature because he's got a dragon egg in the fireplace.
Yeah, this is pretty interesting. The follies with the dragons. Egg and keeping it warm, and Hermione kind of calls it, so she was real sweet to him, and then she's like, Hagrid, you live in a wooden house, maybe chill with the fire.
Yeah, so but Hagrid wasn't listening. He was humming merrily as he stoked the fire.
He's got a baby dragon. That's pretty exciting.
That is pretty exciting. But yeah, if there's one thing I am a little disappointed in the Harry Potter series is the number one, that we don't see enough more dragons than we do. But also, even if we did see more, I think it's the idea that dragons aren't particularly special. They're more like treated. They're definitely an animal and they're treated like an endangered species. They don't have a larger sentient, higher cognitive like ability. Certainly Norbert is not Drogon.
Okay. Oh, that's a good distinction for me to know, because that's what I was basing a lot of this on.
Yeah. So the idea is that Norbert is very like purely wild. Again, if one of those idiots wanted to have a cougar or a lion or whatever, like it's not like in this world, there isn't the sense of, oh, Hagrid's the last Targaryen and can control a dragon. No, he can't.
Okay. Yeah, and we see that pretty clearly here in a little bit.
Yes. Yeah. So they go on with their lessons, and then Hagrid sends them along a note that says it's hatching,
which is a little bold. I mean, like, because what if that got intercepted? Which it kind of does. Malfoy is walking behind them and is like, you guys are up to something. So.
Yeah, and I'm just interested, again, we were talking about why does Malfoy specifically hone in on Neville, but also by extension, why does Malfoy specifically hone in on Hagrid? Because we'll learn later, or you'll learn later, this is not the first time that Malfoy zeroes in on Hagrid to try and make trouble for him.
I wonder if it's just like a superiority complex that Malfoy has, and he can see, like, you know, preying upon a weaker person. And I know Hagrid's an adult, but also like Malfoy so embedded is that he is superior because his family has money. So I don't know if there's a tinge of that's going on. Malfoy is just a huge jerk right now.
Yep. And then the egg hatches and the dragon is jet black and he has orange eyes. And apparently, I don't know if it's specifically stated here, but I was just doing some research background, and apparently Norwegian Ridgebacks can breathe fire earlier than most dragon babies.
Well, and he sneezes and he has little flames shoot out, right? That's what
happens. And I'm just thinking, like, the notion of, like, dragon smuggling, and again, how long or how, like, what conditions can dragon eggs survive and still potentially hatch? Because for me, I'm just thinking, even under this context of, yeah, dragon smugglers and stuff having eggs, and, you know, he won it in this card game with this random stranger, it would make more sense if he had a dragon egg from the region, like a Commonwealth green, like Ron said, or a Heridian black or whatever it was. Like, why specifically Norwegian Ridgeback?
That's a really good point. Because he wins this egg in a like a game that he is playing with somebody, and that's interesting. I didn't really.
So yeah, again, which makes me think that the way that they can get away with these types, you know, with these dragon eggs, again, dragons of different regions, you know, being able to travel long distances, is I think of, like, you know, certainly Norbert is not like Drogon, you know, when he hatches, but in terms of the eggs. You know, in Game of Thrones, the guy Illyrio who gave Daenerys the egg says the ages have turned them to stone, but they're still beautiful. But even despite all that, under the right circumstances, Daenerys was able to facilitate them hatching.
Right. Okay. And this, my Game of Thrones knowledge is a little lacking, very lacking right here. So, it was just because she was so pure-blooded, right?
She has this special relationship with fire that, you know, finally was able to, like, reignite the whatever. So, yeah, I'm considering that kind of in this universe, dragon eggs are the same way, where they can, like, go into, like, slumber, if you will, and again, be easily carried and can travel. And then once you put them in the fire again, it starts up again.
This all just makes me think of Jurassic Park. Not that there's anybody in fire in Jurassic Park, but, like, just kind of extracting, yeah, or just kind of taking something ancient and making it
alive again.
Real. Yeah, alive again, and how they drill into the amber anyway. I was obsessed with Jurassic Park when I was a
kid. I don't know if I'll get to it this year, but I do want to read Jurassic Park.
It has been, I'm talking like 20 years since I've read Jurassic Park, but I saw the movie a bunch. Dinosaurs, similar to dragons, you know, and you've always said we're going to find a dragon, like, fossil eventually. I believe that, too.
Indeed. Norbert, again, is not tameable in any way, shape, or form. And Hagrid is just like, oh, look, he knows who his mummy is and everything. And it's like, ugh.
That's like, yeah, that just reminds, I have such an affection for animals. I could relate to it. It's just like, this critter probably doesn't care about me. Thankfully, I don't have an affection for, like, aggressive creatures. I don't have a pet snake. I'm terrified of spiders. But I've known people that have kind of those kind of animals. And that's just, it's not for me.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, someone was peering in through the window. And of course, Malfoy had seen the dragon.
Of course he did, and little dick.
Yeah, and of course it's Malfoy, because Malfoy's the head bully. But what does it say that Draco is the one to see the dragon?
Well, he shares a similar name.
So. Exactly. Now they're, like, desperate, like, how do we get rid of Norbert? And again, we just think of Hagrid being delusional. To Hagrid's credit, not that, again, that this totally justifies what, you know, the illegal things that he has done, I think it's just the sense of, because Hagrid is so big and so strong, he doesn't register danger in the same way that, like, the kids or any normal wizard would, because he, again, we talked about the kids being able to withstand bodily harm because they're wizards, but whatever they can withstand, Hagrid can withstand way, way more.
Okay, yeah, he's kind of probably has a little bit of, like, oh, it's fine, I can probably handle this thing up to a point. And he kind of learns that, maybe he can't. Like, he keeps fighting him, whatever.
Again, even if it was a position where he could physically handle Norbert, it's still illegal.
Right. Well, and somebody's going to find out. It's a freaking dragon. Like, dude, I wish you just want to just grab Hagrid by the shoulders. I guess you have to stand on several things and just say, come on, man. Like, I'm glad you got to watch it hatch, but, like, it needs to go live somewhere where it can, you know, live and be happy. And that's not with you.
his actions would make more sense if Dragonus in this universe did imprint on people in the same way. Like, have you ever read any of Anne McCaffrey?
I have not. No, I haven't.
Yeah, but you know, it's not just in Anne McCaffrey. It's just the whole notion that, you know, a dragon will imprint on a person or a wizard and they have a special connection and they're like dragon riders and stuff.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah, like, so it would make sense if Hagrid was hoping, like, this dragon will imprint on me and I can, and therefore he's tameable and therefore I can control him. But that's just not the universe that they live in.
No, these are just wild animals, basically. Yeah.
And so they're freaking out. They don't know what they're going to do. And then finally they decide, okay, we're going to send a letter to Charlie, who deals with dragons, and we're going to smuggle the dragon. You know, his friends are going to come to the highest tower and they're going to take him away.
Sounds like a decent plan. They're going
to use a decent plan. And I got to admit, those are some very loyal friends that Charlie has. Yeah, my little brother has an illegal Norwegian Ridgeback. Can you go pick it up for me? Yeah, sure, buddy.
And he doesn't even give him a bad time about it. It's just like, it won't be easy, but we'll take care of it. And he's kind of like, and then I thought it was really interesting that he signed his letter with love, Charlie. I just think that just kind of shows the relationship that family has, that they care about each other.
Yeah, and I think, and again, in terms of, like, the macho stuff, Charlie is at a point in his life, you know, he's an adult, he has his own career, but more importantly, he has a career as a dragon tamer. His masculinity is not called into question just because he addresses his, you know, letters with love.
Oh, no, and I did.
Because it's like, I battle dragons for a living.
Right, and that was not what I took away from it. I just thought it was, like, that shows some affection, that some people might be, you know, some people don't have that relationship with their family. And I thought this was a nice way of showing they're confident in their relationship. That's very cool. And yes, that definitely, if you're like dealing with dragons, there's no question about your masculinity. So Malfoy couldn't make fun of that.
So, but Ron gets bitten.
And his hand swells up, right?
Yeah, and he finally can't hide it anymore and has to go to Madame Pomfrey, the like Medi-Witch.
Now, this all, it makes me curious, and I don't know how this is going to end up, but it kind of like, he gets taken care of and he says it's a dog bite or something, which is absolute bullshit. And I'm guessing she knows it as well. But yeah, there's no indication that he is questioned about it.
I think Madame Pomfrey is one of those like doctors or like people of authority where they're just like, my job is to make sure that the students are safe, and by keeping them safe and not asking questions and not turning them in, they will always come to me.
I like that philosophy. I mean, that is an appropriate one, especially in a magic school. I mean, there's probably gonna also, I guess there's probably gonna be some weird things happening that you're probably like, I don't need the explanation, let's solve the problem and move on.
And again, we don't know exactly how specific a dragon bite looks compared to like maybe other things. Like, for all we know, maybe things, oh, like he was handling something maybe he shouldn't in one of the classrooms, like for older students, like maybe, again, maybe she doesn't know specifically it's a dragon. It's like, okay, he did something that he shouldn't have, but I'm not going to say anything.
Right. Good for her. Good that didn't, like, get all drawn out into something, whatever.
And during this whole thing, Malfoy comes into the hospital wing taunting Ron, saying he's going to tell everyone about Norbert.
I mean, typical Malfoy. Would we expect anything less? No.
No.
We honestly, in kind of like with the kids, are surprised that he doesn't tell somebody sooner than he does.
Yeah. And so, you know, and the note from Charlie was in the book that Draco took. And so now he knows exactly where they're going to go. And it's too late to tell Charlie's friends to not come. And so they just have to bite the bullet and do it.
And lucky for them, they have an invisibility cloak. I don't think Draco has one.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. It's kind of implied that invisibility cloaks are extremely rare, even in this world.
Yes, yeah.
So, yeah, the four broomsticks just come towards the tallest tower. They, you know, hitch up Norbert on their brooms or whatever, and they fly away.
Easy as that. It all does happen very quickly. They're like, oh, yeah, here's this dragon. Okay, bye. And then they leave.
Yeah, so. And honestly, given to how easy it was, it makes me wonder, because, you know, Dumbledore is the headmaster, is in charge of, like, all the magical spells that protect Hogwarts.
Yes.
I have a theory that maybe Dumbledore knew Hagrid had done this, and let them and kind of let it all happen and let them get rid of it easily and kind of maybe change the wards around the school so that the guys could come get the dragon.
Yeah, I feel like Dumbledore kind of lets Hagrid make his mistakes, for lack of a better term, and kind of just is like, he's doing whatever.
But right before they Norbert gets taken away, Draco shows up with McGonagall. And McGonagall's like, how dare you make up such lies, yada, yada, yada. Which, again, given my theory of Dumbledore maybe knowing, it makes me wonder, does McGonagall know, too? I can't say with certainty.
It definitely seems like they might know more than they let on. And, McGonagall takes points from Slytherin and tells him to, and then Harry, Hermione, and Ron are like, this is awesome. Like, we got the dragon let go. Draco's in trouble. Like, life is good for, 2 minutes.
Yeah, their elation is punctured when they realize Filch's face looms suddenly out of the darkness. Well, 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 he whispered. We are in trouble. They'd left the invisibility cloak on top of the tower.
Poor guys. Probably understand where they come. You know, that's a lot of excitement. So.
Yeah, some people criticize that as a, too convenient, plot point for them to get in trouble. But honestly, again, all the stress they're under trying to get rid of this dragon and just being so happy about it and nearly, misskiving off McGonagall and Malfoy, it totally makes sense to me as 11-year-olds that they just, left the invisibility cloak.
It makes sense. It makes sense to me. I mean, you'd like to think Hermione out of all of them would have remembered, but also that was a pretty, interesting situation that, unusual situation that they had not been.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that are our chapters. And would you like to go into Gothic Geek Out?
Sure. I felt like it was a little sparse on the Gothic in this. The dragons aren't necessarily a Gothic trope. That, I guess, is supernatural,
no.
But I feel like that's a little reaching. So the only thing I could think of was the mention of the Forbidden Forest. But I know that our upcoming chapter is the Forbidden Forest. So I didn't really find a lot of gothicness in these two chapters. What did I miss?
Again, you didn't miss very much. Again, there just wasn't a lot in terms of gothic. The only things you can kind of construed is, I think, maybe the magic of alchemy and the idea of I can't name any specific examples, but just the idea of, again, alchemy being the precursor to chemistry and just that whole relationship between superstition and legitimate science. I think that goes into the ideas of fantasy and, again, the way gothic was a precursor to speculative and science fiction.
I totally overlooked that, and that would make sense. But it's good to know I didn't see a lot of gothic in this. And I think from our conversations that there are gothic elements, but we really get into more deeper gothic later on.
Yeah, and then the only other thing I can think of in terms of dragons, just by the nature of dragons, the only thing I really thought of was The Historian by Elizabeth Kostova, because this dragon symbol is so often affiliated with, Satan and just devil worship or Satanism or this just mere symbolism of the devil can appear a lot in gothic and thriller fiction.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh gosh. Vlad the Impaler, Dracula. Yeah.
And all the dragon books that show up.
Yeah. Okay. Go listen to the Historian episode.
Ah, yes.
Of Sublimely Gothic.
And then we can move on to quotes. Did you think of any that really stood out?
I did. I had a couple. I mean, I have to say, last time I was real on about the Dumbledore quote, but that was that's an iconic quote. So let me find it. We talked a lot about, so I'll just go through for the Nicholas Flamel chapter, is this is from Harry. He'd really done something to be proud of now. No one could say he was just a famous name anymore. And I know that's something that you have brought up several times, is that, he's just been Harry Potter because of the way his parents died and that he survived. But then by kind of proving himself in this Quidditch match, he felt prideful of something that he had done. So I thought that was an interesting quote to relate to that in that chapter. And then I highlighted something in the next chapter just because of the climate that we're living in right now. I'll never remember this. Ron burst out one afternoon, throwing down his quill and looking longingly out of the library window. It was the first really fine day they'd had in months. The sky was clear, forget-me-not blue, and there was a feeling in the air of summer coming. And I guess maybe I highlighted that because I think I'm longing for that day right now.
Because it's currently -5 where you are.
Exactly.
Did you have any others?
No, that was it. I didn't have a lot of quotes in here.
Yeah, I had none for these chapters because, again, nothing just really came out at me. And I think I want to restructure how we do quotes again, because just by the way we go through the chapters together, I think we kind of cover the quotes within our general summary.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
So I wanted to add a new exercise to our podcast, and we can, you know, pick a tarot card.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Because this is something I used to do for my, like, my original Harry Potter podcast that's not available anymore, that I just did myself because it was all about, like, all the pagan stuff. But I think it's worthwhile to do in this podcast as well. So I'm going to pick, I'm going to pick a random tarot card, and then I'm going to read you the definitions and just think about how the themes of those card, of that card, fits into the chapters, okay?
Okay, sweet.
So the card I pulled up is the Ten of Pentacles. Like, do you have any experience with tarot, out of curiosity?
I have very surface level knowledge of tarot. If, from what I understand, pentacles, that's money. Okay. Beyond that, I have more oracle cards than I do tarot cards. So I don't really know. Like I said, surface level, I kind of know, but not in depth. Knowledge.
Yeah. So yeah, I do both. I do tarot cards and oracle cards. So the Ten of Pentacles, as you're right, it's one of the four suits of the minor arcana. And the basically pentacles were the precursor for the clubs that you see in modern playing cards.
Makes sense. Sorry. Everything's dry here.
Okay. And so let's see. So the meaning behind the Ten of Pentacles is, it is a positive sign that you have reached a point of completion and accomplishment in your journey. As a Pentacles card, this sense of accomplishment is likely to be the result of a successful career path, smart financial investment, a stable home environment, and a possible committed and long-term relationship. You have accumulated wealth and abundance through your hard work and dedication and can now relish sharing the wealth with others. This is one of those cards that promise everything will eventually come together and you will be proud of everything you have achieved. So, that sort of sentiment, how do you feel that relates to these chapters?
I guess there was a list. So money always make, right now is making me think of Malfoy, but I don't think we really, you know, not in this context, just that he's like puts importance on that. I guess like Norbert had kind of a little journey, you know, he was smuggled somehow, won in a game, and then he's off to live in Happy Dragonland. So I would apply that to him more over anything, but I really would love to hear your take on that card and in these two chapters.
So I think, again, right with Norbert, like, I think part of Lee, you know, it seems the accumulation. So I think it was set up that Hagrid always wanted a dragon. So even though it's very, very, you know, fleeting, he does get that sort of fulfillment of his desire.
Yes.
Which that sentiment is in the Ten of Pentacles. And then again, you know, the sort of accomplishment and fulfillment of, you know, oh my God, we finally got rid of this dragon.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
And then also, again, the sense of fulfillment that they're putting the puzzle pieces together about, you know, the Philosopher's Stone and Nicholas Flamel. And by extension, the fact that the Philosopher's Stone can turn any, like, substance into gold.
Yeah.
Good so point. That brings, you know, the money aspect of the pentacles in.
Yeah.
The Ten of Pentacles indicates that you feel compelled to share your success with others to make sure they are well cared for, too. You work hard to get here, and now you can see the bigger impact of your accomplishments have on others. And in a way, that makes me think of, again, Hagrid, like, is so happy that he got his dragon egg that he can't contain himself. Like, it's not like he was willing to keep this a secret from the kids.
Right. Yeah, that's very true. He really wanted to share that with somebody, and it just happened to be Harry and Ron and Hermione.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's all I can think of within these chapters for the Ten of Pentacles.
Yeah, I almost related it to also here at the end with Harry and winning the Quidditch match for Gryffindor.
Ah, yes, this is true.
Maybe a little, but he does kind of take a little bit of it. he's not like, and I won for Gryffindor. He's like, and I proved to myself I have something to be proud of. So
yeah, this is true. Alrighty then. So yeah, I'm hopeful that we can continue our tarot reading cards together.
I like that. That's right. And then I also learned something about tarot, and I've always wanted to learn things about tarot. So
I think even though I'm a pagan, I don't think of tarot necessarily as fortune telling. I see it more as like a tool of self-reflection, because a lot of people criticize that, you know, fortune telling, you know, activities, like it doesn't matter what the cards say, you'll always find something that you can relate to it. And I don't see that as a criticism. Like, I embrace that mentality of seeing like, okay, if I see a card and I know its meaning, I can like think through and reflect what specific element of my life exemplifies that.
I'm glad you said that, but that's my approach I take to oracle cards. I usually use them as kind of like journal prompts and then kind of reflect on that in the context of, you know, what the book says or whatever. I have a few decks, very earthy. And I would use them too when I taught yoga to kind of set an intention for the practice before we started. Cool.
Yeah. And then, because I think there is that very specific study where they were trying to like debunk all sorts of like astrology and stuff like that by saying that it doesn't matter what it is, you will always say that it's true because you'll always find something that apply in your life that applies to it. And again, I embrace that mentality of seeing, yeah, so therefore you can dig deep in your life and, you know, maybe think about some things you otherwise wouldn't think about.
Nothing wrong with self-reflection. In fact, more people should do some of it. I think we'd be on our way to a better world. Some people stopped and thought about things a little bit.
Alrighty then, and now we move on to fan fiction time.
Whew, I struggled with this week, Amy.
Okay, so what was your scenario?
You know, I really tried to think about things in, you know, kind of how it would ripple through the series. I'm not well versed enough in that. And then I kind of thought like I couldn't find anything too poignant, and I'm not going to be as like dark as I have in the past with, you know, killing characters. I guess the only thing that I could, you know, kind of came to is what if the Norbert secret kind of didn't go as well as it did? You know, what if he did destroy Hagrid's house, and would that have caused Hagrid to lose his job? And then, or, you know, what would have happened? Would he be in Azkaban, right? That's the prison. Did I get that right?
Yeah. Like, again, we don't know in terms of smuggling what the sentence is, like whether it's just a fine or like jail time. So yeah, certainly, again, like if Norbert had burned down Hagrid's house and having to catch the dragon and all of that, I don't know if it were that public, I don't know how Dumbledore could have saved Hagrid's ass.
Yeah.
If Dumbledore like went to a teacher, like Draco went to McGonagall and McGonagall went to Dumbledore, I think if it was still kind of private, then Dumbledore would have worked to like make sure Malfoy didn't say anything, whether bribery or something else, like to keep it like quiet. But yeah, if Hagrid's house had like blew up, then yeah, I don't think Dumbledore could have saved him, and Hagrid might have been arrested because he's already not on the best terms with authority because he was expelled from Hogwarts, as he said, and his ability to use magic is limited.
Yeah, that was kind of the best like scenario I could figure out. What did you come up with?
I came up with, you know, again, we talked about that in the Harry Potter world, dragons are very much purely just wild animals and they're treated as such. My scenario is, what if they could have a higher beast of intelligence? And more specifically, what if Norbert had imprinted on one of the kids?
Ooh, okay. So it could have been like a pet, like maybe?
Yeah, like what if Norbert was a Drogon?
That would be awesome, because that would mean there were more dragons in Harry Potter, which I'm totally into that for sure. Wow, interesting scenario. You know, and I kind of didn't know that they weren't that prevalent throughout the series. So I kind of thought, well, maybe we'll get to see some dragons and later on. But knowing that they're not, it would be exciting to have. I kind of always wondered, like, through this, why a dragon wasn't guarding Hogwarts, or he's not like roaming around the Forbidden Forest kind of protecting things.
So for me, my whole thing is I would like to think that if it was possible, I would have liked Norbert to imprint on Ron, because Ron has all of his insecurities. So if he had like this one thing that made him different, I feel like he would feel a lot better about himself.
Yeah, that would probably do better for Ron in the long run. I know that eventually he and Harry get into an argument that lasts a little while, at least from what I remember. And maybe just there's a little lack of confidence there that... Well, I think Ron continues to have a little lack of confidence and inferiority complex that he deals with throughout the series.
Yeah, because I'm not going to lie, I highly doubt I will ever like publish or put this online, but I do have a whole like fanfic scenario like mapped out or outlined where Harry has a twin sister.
Oh,
like, so it's like an original character that, you know, goes to Hogwarts with all of them. And her thing ends up being is that Norbert imprints on her. And so she ends up being like a mother of dragons.
I feel like you said that and all these people are just going to go, I want to read that right now. So that sounds very interesting.
Yeah. So it's just the idea again that if Norbert could be tamed, then I think again, because the nature of Hogwarts being in the middle of nowhere, like as long as he was tameable in the way that Daenerys can control her dragons, that it could be possible that there's just a dragon roaming around the same way there's a huge giant squid in the Black Lake.
So scary. Yeah, I'd take a dragon over a squid. I know that's weird.
The giant squid is so nice. Why are you so prejudiced against him?
It's all the tentacles. They just freak me out. I don't know him very much about him yet. So maybe I'll get over my
squid. He is a kindly cephalopod.
Okay, I trust you.
Alrighty then, and that concludes episode 7 of The Rambling Raven Puffs. Tune in next time, guys, for chapters 15 and 16, which are The Forbidden Forest and Through the Trap Door. And joining us for that episode will be Jess's friend, gothic writer and enthusiast, Morgan Chalfont, who has joined us several times for Sublimely Gothic and is now joining us here for all the creepy things that occur within the Forbidden Forest.
Always good to talk to Morgan. I don't do it enough.
Alrighty then. So again, stay tuned for that. Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.